Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The T.D. James Moody Jazz Festival in Newark, New Jersey is happening now and runs through November 21st. Performing this evening, November 11th at 7:30 p.m., bassist Christian McBride's The Movement Revisited with special readings by Sonia Sanchez and others. Vocalist Diane Reeves with the ensemble Artemis performs on Saturday, November 13th. Dorothean's Place, the jazz brunch series at Nico Kitchen and Bar featuring pianist Cyrus Chestnut and the Sarah Vaughan International Jazz Vocal Competition are both happening on Sunday, November 14th. For more information, njpac.org. Vocalist Jane Monheit performs at The Egg at the Center for the Performing Arts as part of the American Roots and Branches series in Albany, New York tonight, November 11th, 7:30 p.m. For more information, theegg.org. Organist and pianist Chris Foreman performs at the Green Mill Jazz Club in Chicago, Illinois on Friday, November 12th. For more information, greenmilljazz.com. Performing at Constellation in Chicago, Illinois, the J.D. Allen Trio with bassist Eric Rivas and drummer Nasheed Waits on Friday, November 12th. And sitar player and storyteller Shanta Narula on Saturday, November 13th. For more information, constellation-chicago.com. This Friday and Saturday night, November 12th and 13th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, the Gil Paris Quartet with special guest guitarist Bernie Williams performs two sets. And on Sunday, November 14th, Brazilian Sunday with vocalist Kate Baker for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. And performing during a live stream tonight, November 11th at 7 p.m., is the Hiroshi Yamakasi Quartet with Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York. For more information, facebook.com/jazzforumclub. The Tani Tabal Trio, saxophonist Adam Siegel, bassist Michael Bizio, and drummer Tani Tabal, perform at Lace Mill in the East Gallery on Sunday, November 14th. For more information, bizio@earthlink.net. Vibus Warren Wolf performs at Dizzy's Jazz Club in New York City tonight, November 11th through November 14th. For more information, 2021.jazz.org/dizzys-club. Bassist Martin Wind will be on tour on the heels of his new release, My Astorian Queen, on Laker Records. He'll be at Deerhead Inn in Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania, on Sunday, November 14th, the Martin Wind Quartet at Cellar Dog in New York City on Thursday, November 18th, and the Martin Wind Trio at Mesro in New York City on Friday, November 19th. The West Stockbridge Historical Society presents the West Stockbridge Jazz Series featuring pianist Armin Danilian, bassist David Clark, drummer George Schuler, and special guest vocalist Dominique Eade on Saturday, November 13th at The Foundry in West Stockbridge, Massachusetts. For more information, weststockbridgehistory.org. Saxophonists Jessica Jones and Tony Jones and friends performed during the Monday Jazz Sessions at Quinn's in Beacon, New York on Monday, November 15th. For more information, facebook.com/Quinn's Beacon. And now for new releases. Out tomorrow, Friday, November 12th, bassist Martin Wynn's My Astorian Queen on Leica and saxophonist Alan Lowe's A Love Supine, Ascension into the Maelstrom, Outsider Music on ESP Disc. Other new releases, baritone saxophonist Josh Sinton's B on FIP, pianist Ayumi Tanaka's Sabaquia's Silence on ECM, guitarist Augustine Pereira's Lucina's 1980 release La Rana on Far Out Recordings, and pianist Miki Yamanaka's Stairway to the Stars on Outside in Music. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guests today are Dorothy Ann Kirk, an arts consultant and so much more, and John Schreiber, president and CEO of the New Jersey Performing Arts Center in Newark, New Jersey. This interview was recorded on Thursday, November 4th, the day before the start of the 10th annual T.D. James Moody Festival held in Newark, New Jersey. So thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So you two, I am always ready for brunch. What is on the menu for Sunday, November 14th?
A lot of bacon. There's going to be a lot of bacon.
Should we telling everyone this? Bacon?
Absolutely. You know what? When we first started the brunches, they didn't have bacon on the menu, and I just drove them crazy. So finally, so that's kind of an inside joke with me and John.
Will there be mimosas?
I think they will be available, right, John?
That is correct. Yeah, there'll be mimosas. There'll be eggs, there'll be home fries, there'll be grits, there'll be cake, there'll be salad, if you can think it up and you think it sounds like brunch, it'll probably be there. And if Dorothy Ann shows up and it's not there, she go in the kitchen and complain and it'll get there.
My mouth is already watering.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah.
So Dorothy Ann, How long has your name been associated with the brunch, and when did the New Jersey Performing Arts Center become the gathering spot?
That was 2012. John became president of NJPAC, if I remember correctly, in 2011, and he created the T.D. James Moody Jazz Festival, and the brunch became part of it. It's always on the last day of the festival, just before the Cervon Vocal Competition. So it was John's brainchild, of which he has many, 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 and always successful.
Oh, thank you very much.
John, you've been the CEO of the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, as Dorothy Ann said, since 2011. As one of the folks involved in programming jazz and improvised music, how do you keep up with emerging artists and their music? I mean, I have a hard enough time as a programmer on the radio. How do you do it?
I'm going to be very honest with you and tell you I don't. As the, you know, kind of the leader of this institution, am really lucky that a fellow named David Rodriguez, who is our executive producer, who manages all of our programming across a bunch of different venues. He used to run the Apollo, and he's actually a wonderful jazz bassist himself. You know, he and Darth Ann are really the ones who choose the artists who perform at the brunch. And the Moody Festival celebrates 10 years at this festival. And James Moody was a friend of mine. He was a friend of Darth Ann's. He was somebody who spent a lot of time as a young man and as an adult in Newark. So he really feels like a Newarker and felt like a Newarker. And Moody was just such a wonderful man. Besides being a great instrumentalist and improviser and composer, Moody was also a beautiful human being. And the whole spirit of jazz is about collaboration and communication and kindness and generosity. And so when we decided we wanted to have a jazz festival at the Arts Center, we couldn't think of a better person to name it after. And Moody's widow, Linda Moody, gave us permission. And Linda is kind of the godmother of the festival. And she comes every year from California and spends 10 days with us. And it's just a lovely gathering of musicians and community. And Darth Ann, Darth Ann and I have known each other for 45 years. And Darth Ann is one of the founders of WBGO in Newark, the wonderful jazz radio station. And Darth Ann is known as the First Lady of Jazz in Newark. And so to have the First Lady host a brunch felt like a really lovely thing to do. And she said, yes.
I've been married for 25 years. And the one thing my husband and I don't argue about is money, but we always argue over that last piece of pie. Since you two have known each other for like 45 years, what's the one thing that you two argue about?
I don't know. What do you say?
Me either. We John, we've never argued.
We've never had an argument, no.
Sometimes as his elder, I have in the past reprimanded him because sometimes I think he's too tough on his staff, as great of a guy he is, but he's brilliant and he explained it to me. So John has a very, very, and I'm sure you read his bio, he has a very long and incredibly interesting career. So I understand why he's always, let's say, on top of it. But that's the only thing I can think of. And so it's really not arguing.
Yeah. Well, so and I tell you, Cheryl, whenever there is the potential for an argument with Darth Ann, I recuse myself from the conversation and David Rodriguez has the argument with Darth Ann, you see. That's how we've maintained our terrific relationship over so many years, right? If I don't have to have an argument, I don't want to have one, especially with her. Because the easiest thing with Darth Ann is just to say yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you,
exactly.
John.
That's correct, thank you. Right.
Yeah, and sometimes David and I have incredible artistic differences, let's say.
So let's talk about the festival, the 10th annual T.D. James Moody Festival. It's happening now and runs through November 21st. I'd like for the both of you to mention some of the talent scheduled to perform.
DK, do you want to start?
Okay. Saturday, the festival, actually, I just found out, kicks off Friday, but I can't remember the artist, John.
It's Django All-Stars. It's a tribute to Django Reinhardt, yeah.
Right. Then it picks up Saturday, which I'm very proud to say. NJ Pack is a partner with my church, Bethany Baptist. And Saturday, there's the Buster Williams Quartet at Bethany at 6 o'clock. And the next Saturday, we're screening the documentary on WBGO at Bethany. And that's, I'm hoping that it's very, very well attended, because as you know, WBGO is in Newark. Matter of fact, literally a stone's throw with a good arm from the Art Center. So I'm hoping people will come out and see the story about how their own WBGO began. And of course, I'm hosting the brunch with Cyrus Chestnut, who was actually one of the first artists back in 2012 that performed at the brunch previously. So we're having him back. He's a favorite of Newark. John, you might want to talk about some of the other events at NJPAC.
Sure. I think, Dorothan, you should talk about Jazz Vespers at Bethany Baptist Church, which is such a long live tradition in Newark, and Dr. Howard and your curating of that series over so many years, free music with some of the greatest artists in the world. And they all come to Newark because they love Dorothan. And when I got to Newark and I realized that the head preacher at the most important Baptist church in Newark was a huge jazz fan, and like me, basically did whatever Dorothan wanted, I realized that we had an opportunity to engage with a community tradition that really means so much to so many people. How'd you invent that, DK?
Absolutely. When Dr. Howard came to Bethany in 2000, he created Jazz Vespers, and everybody said it couldn't be done, and I will try and explain briefly, because having jazz in a Baptist church is unheard of, because it's the devil's music and so on and so forth. But to fast forward, when COVID hit in March of 2020, we were right in the middle of celebrating 20 successful years. We ended on March 7th, 2020, with a tribute to Jerry Allen, who had been a member of Bethany, and she was eulogized there. She did several important productions there, such as Mary Lou Williams Mass and a special Christmas program and other. We've had a who's who in jazz there, going anywhere from Jimmy Heath to Randy Weston to Gregory Porter. John, you know that story. We've actually presented Gregory twice before, let's say he blew up and is no longer able to do those kind of events. So it's a real success story. NJPAC, as I said earlier, is a partner. And in addition to the November 6th concert with Buster Williams, we're resuming the regular Jazz Vespers on January 8th at 6 o'clock p.m. with harpist Brandy Younger. And I have several of the next few months scheduled. Actually, I'm almost done scheduling the 2022 Jazz Vespers. So I'm looking forward to it, and thanking NJPAC again for their support and hoping people are ready to hear live music again.
I think they are.
We just
had Gregory Porter in our 2,800 seat theater the other night, and he sold it out. So
I was there.
He's a great person and a great artist, and really is carrying on the tradition in a unique way. A thing I'm looking forward to is the 10th anniversary of our Sarah Vaughan International Jazz Competition, and that will take place, I think, on the 13th. Yeah, and that's a wonderful program where literally 800 or 900 singers from around the world apply to be finalists in the competition, and then we have the competition live in one of our theaters. And the winner gets a record contract and $5,000 and an enhanced recognition in the community. And Jasmia Horn is a winner, and Cyril Ami has been a winner, and just any number of really wonderful young artists. And that's something that we do with WBGO every year. So I'm looking forward to that. We're also going to do a celebration of my old boss and Darth Ann's friend, George Ween, who just passed, and we'll celebrate his life with an all-star group that's led by Annette Cohen, the terrific saxophonist, and Christian McBride, and many other artists, and so I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, and jazz, we define jazz very broadly, always have, and so Chaka Khan will be at the festival on Saturday night, and I'm sure we'll have a wonderful performance. And it's just a very varied schedule. Chris Bode will be there, who is a sort of terrific entertainer and musician. And so, you know, my old boss George used to say, everybody doesn't like jazz or doesn't think they like jazz, but everybody likes a jazz festival. So our goal is to get the aficionados to come, but also people who are interested in learning and exploring and discovering to come. And we hope our festival, like other good festivals, create new fans, right, for the music. Yeah.
The New Jersey Performing Arts Center has served the Newark, New Jersey community since 1997 in a variety of ways: arts and entertainment, arts education and civic engagement, and economic development. From both of you, anecdotally, how have you seen jazz and improvised music engage and impact audiences?
DK, you go. You first, madam.
Well, Newark doesn't really have a jazz club as such, and hadn't for many years. The Art Center has been really a blessing to the people in the community with the programming that they do there. Not only just the festival, the jazz programming that they do the other parts of the year. And a good example is Sounds of the City that happens every Thursday in the summer after work. Jazz is one of the genres that's included, and it's a great outdoor event for people to come and just sit and chill out, have some food or whatever. So that's one of the benefits. Never mind the NJ PAC Jazz for Teens program that's part of their education department. WBGO has been a partner with that particular department since its inception. And while I'm talking, Sunday, November 7th, I organized and will be hosting the WBGO Children's Concert in the Victoria Theater as part of the festival. That program was started by WBGO with yours truly in 1993 and has really grown over the years.
Yeah, and we also have a Newark, the Rutgers Institute of Jazz Studies, which is the largest jazz archive in the country. And students and scholars alike are able to go there and dig in on the history of the music. We, DK and I, believe that understanding and learning the history of the music is so much fun and such a valuable thing to do. And the Institute advances that every day. So that's a unique asset that we have in the city. We also operate a jazz and poetry program with Rutgers, where young poets and young musicians collaborate together to create new art. And that mix is something that is really terrific. And, you know, the whole nature of improvisation for us enables our kids to have a voice and to gain confidence in themselves and their own creativity. And anytime we can do that for a young person, whether they end up becoming a musician or a dentist, they're going to be better citizens because they've learned that they've learned the courage to create and collaborate and socialize in ways that only jazz delivers. You know, Wynton Marsalis said once, jazz is the most democratic of musics, because in order for great jazz to be present, people have to listen to each other, they have to respect each other, and they have to collaborate in unexpected ways. So that's our opportunity with jazz, and we really love doing that.
For more information, njpac.org. And now for some music.
Thank you. things real when you dream. Then that cold wind blows and you awake to what it means to be alive. You can search, you'll not find why that cold wind blows the walls you've built around your heart and leaves you shook. Things that happen for the best are not what they may seem. Perhaps you could just rest a while, allow yourself to dream. Given what your choices are, you might just stand and fight. Watch the stars as they burn their last light. A cold wind blows through a life, sometimes restlessly. A cold wind blows through a life, sometimes restlessly.
Stand and fight. Watch the stars as they burn.
wind blows through a life sometimes restlessly. A cold wind blows through a life sometimes restlessly. A cold wind blows through a life sometimes restlessly. A cold wind blows through a life sometimes restlessly.
Born in Mississippi, raised in Indiana, and currently a resident of Southern California, guitarist and music therapist George Gilliam. His 2017 release, Many Roads Home, is on Gilliam Music, Skipper Productions. We heard Highway 61. Michael Saucier on bass and Don Littleton on drums and congas. The song before that is titled Cold Wind, written by pianist Steve Million for his self-produced release, Jazz Words, one of two new releases that are out now by him. The release, featuring award-winning vocalist and songwriter Sarah Marie Young, was made in one afternoon in 2016. Cold Wind is a reflection on surviving cancer and the birth of Million's daughter. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with multi-instrumentalist and singer-songwriter Leo Sedrin. The Art of the Conversation is his 7th solo release. He's just back from a short European tour and performs tonight, November 11th, at Barb's in Brooklyn, New York, and The Bitter End in the West Village of Manhattan, New York City, on November 18th.
They got a song for winners. They got the song for those who lose. They got a song for dealers. They got a song for those who use.
Well, thank you so much for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to talk to you.
You've just come back from a short European tour. How was it?
It was all of the things. It was really wonderful. In some ways, I feel like I sort of cashed in on the last 18 months of social isolation by taking my little road show to the people and remembering what that felt like. It, you know, there is some question, maybe only I feel it, but I have a feeling other people do too. Will I be able to do it again? What will it feel like to get in front of people, both in that sort of close proximity that we have been lacking, and also just, is it like riding a bike? Can I get back on stage and connect with people again after not having done it for a year and a half? And I'm happy to report that, you know, all signs point to yes.
Well, your release is aptly titled, because your songs are so conversational. You sing to your listeners about struggles of the heart, sentimentality, longing, married to upbeat tempos and funny lyrics like the song Song for a Sucker Like You, or sweeping melancholic melodies like Row On. Do you notice differences and or similarities in the responses to your songs from European audiences compared to American audiences? Are those emotions and experiences I mentioned universal?
I think they are universal. I don't know that I could identify differences in the audiences. I think there is the question of language. You know, for me, and I, you know, it's not only me, most songwriters probably feel this way, but I certainly do. The words matter, you know, and so I think about what I'm saying in these songs, and I wonder sometimes when I'm singing to a Spanish audience or a French audience, you know, do they know what the words mean, or is there some emotional truth in the melodies, in the music, in the intention of the delivery that translates, even if they don't understand all the words? And so in that sense, maybe there is a little bit of a difference. When I play to an American audience, I'm, you know, desperately aware of the fact that they know what I'm talking about. And in a foreign audience, they may or may not. But you made, you know, some note of the melodies themselves, and that maybe some information is just happening in the music. And if that's true, then, you know, these songs should be universal.
Yeah. I tell you what, since you've mentioned, you know, we're talking about songwritings, why don't we jump right to your two upcoming gigs in Brooklyn? There's Barb's on Thursday, November 11th. That's coming up.
Yeah.
And The Bitter End on Thursday, November 18th. And that's titled Songwriters in the Round with Anne Klein, Will Lee, and Rob Arthur.
That's right. That's actually in the West Village. The Bitter End is in the West Village in Manhattan. So there's one in Brooklyn and one in Manhattan. Okay. So if you have, you know, if people are in Manhattan and don't want to cross a bridge or go under a tunnel, they can just stay in town. Yeah. I mean, the one on the 11th is with my band, which is, you know, that's another thing. In New York, as musicians, we have access to so many of the greatest musicians in the world, you know, and so a lot of times when I play my music in New York, I use it as also an opportunity to put together different, you know, groupings of musicians and see what happens, and also learn from those experiences. Like this week, for the first time, I'm playing with the pianist John Cowherd, who I've been a fan of for years, but he's never played my material before. So that's, you know, that's a good opportunity to work with somebody new and learn about my own music by playing with him. And the Songwriters in the Round thing on the 18th is another example of getting together with a group of people that I don't really know that well. Will Lee, the bass player, I do know. The other two, I don't really know. And all of us are playing our own original songs with one another, for one another, to each other, and backing each other up. So it's like it's a little gathering of songwriters playing each other's songs.
I can't tell you how encouraged I am by so many artists who are writing their own material. I'll assume, but I'll also ask, that on November 18th, you'll be talking about your own creative process and how you come up with these tunes. I'm thinking of something from the release, The Art of Conversation, the tune Georgette.
Yeah.
And yeah, is that, who's that about?
You know, that song is technically about Georgette Magritte, who was the wife of the painter Henri Magritte, the Belgian painter. She was the wife and muse of this painter. And I would like to say that I, you know, have been thinking about Georgette Magritte for years, but in fact, I sometimes, in an effort to get things moving, will use any number of creative techniques to get going. And one day I said to my wife, hey, give me the name. My wife's name is Amanda, not Georgette. But I said to her, give me the name of a woman's name. What's a good woman's name? She said, Georgette. So I started to write a verse about Georgette. And then I said to her, by the way, why did you say Georgette? And she said, oh, I'm reading this book about Georgette Magritte. So I said, oh, wow. Okay. So I was like already kind of into the song, but I Googled Georgette Magritte and read up on her and looked into who she was. And she was a muse. She was tied up in this love triangle. She was kind of a complex figure, but also, you know, like somebody who was an inspiration to an artist. And so I started to think about that and write a kind of a rough character sketch of her, thinking, well, at least I've got the only song about Georgette Magritte out there. And once my record came out, it was brought to my attention that Paul Simon wrote a song about Georgette Magritte in the early 80s. So incredibly, I'm not even the first person to write a song about this obscure historical figure.
Isn't it great having a spouse? They're great sounding boards, and they come up with better ideas. I know my husband comes up with better ideas for naming our cats than I am, and they're worth their weight in gold.
Oh, yeah. And especially in the last, you know, in this period that we've gone through. I mean, you know, I'm so grateful that you are complimentary of this record and that it, you know, meant something to you or enough to want to talk to me about it. But I think that I don't know if I had written this same collection of songs and put out the same record, but COVID never happened. I wonder how people would have felt about it, because it really is a little small, homey, kind of intimate record that for some reason is connecting with the moment, or right, was, you know, connected with the moment in which it was released. And I don't know how much of that is influenced by the moment. These are the songs that came out of me, you know, in the last year and a half, but for some reason people hear them through the filter of, you know, of the times.
Just the other day, I was thinking about Archie Shepp's Attica Blues, which came out in 1972. He wrote that in response to the Attica prison uprise. So what you're saying is, yeah, in that moment, you're inspired to write about whatever is going on around you.
Yes.
And so many other people are feeling the same thing.
Well, that's what's incredible. I mean, this is the first time in my lifetime in which I don't think your politics, personal, local, all of that is independent of what we went through. You know, like everybody experienced on the planet is experiencing this pandemic and experiencing it. It's undeniable. So even if you are a person who would be willing to turn a blind eye to, you know, a prison uprising or injustice or, you know, any number of issues that we could name, nobody could turn a blind eye to this one. And for the first time, I think we all had to come to terms with the fact that we were all experiencing something together.
Truly. How long have you been based in Brooklyn?
Long enough to apparently say I'm a Brooklyn person, a New Yorker. I have been here for maybe 16 or 17 years. I moved here in my late 20s.
Yeah, because you've got that song, This Is Night in Brooklyn, and you romanticize this New York borough.
Yeah.
But with the structural forces of government and business continuing to shape and change Brooklyn through what some have called gentrification, for better or for worse, where do you see that, you know, and I'm quoting this line, the stars are shining bright and brilliantly for you and me?
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate that question. I think that's such a thoughtful question. And at the same time, you know, that some of these songs are literally lullabies that were written. You know, I'll sort of back up and say that but I do want to answer the question thoughtfully. That song is essentially processing the experience of Brooklyn through my daughter's eyes. You know, that's a song that paints a picture of a world, of a very sort of childlike, wonderful world that she experiences or has experienced. And in fact, the story of that song is that she wrote she drew a picture years ago. She's 10 now. She maybe was 5 or 6 when she drew it. She drew a picture, and it was kind of a cityscape And along the top, she scrawled in childish writing, "This is night in Brooklyn." And I took it to, I went to meet this incredible cartoonist and creative thinker named Linda Berry, who has written some books on creativity and on visual arts that I really like. And I showed her this picture that my daughter drew, thinking, you know, that she was going to tell me that my daughter was a genius and needed to be, you know, celebrated immediately. And Linda Berry said, "You're a musician, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Write a song about that. Use that to write a song." So the song really is actually kind of translating what is on the page drawn by a six-year-old into these lyrics. And in fact, you know, this in a funny way, the stars have been shining brighter for you and me during COVID. And I was very aware of that when the world was sort of grounded and shut down, we all had a chance to see the night sky a little more clearly. And there was all this evidence that, you know, the canals in Venice and Italy were clearing up because there were fewer tourists. And as our carbon footprints were reduced, the planet healed itself very quickly at first, you know. So there is maybe a little bit of a nod to that in that lyric, you know, but that lyric is not meant in any way to deny all of the realities that you bring up. I mean, look, I moved here in the mid 2000s, and already people were telling me that this neighborhood that I live in Park Slope had changed, that it was no longer affordable, that it was gentrified, that it wasn't what it had been before. And now I'm here, you know, for nearly 20 years, and I'm here to say it's not the place it was that I moved to, that it has once again cycled into a space where to be an artist or to be anybody who doesn't, you know, have really, really deep pockets is harder and harder.
But here we are at the end of this interview, and I always give my guests the last word. Mm. And if there's something I didn't ask you, something you would like to say to us.
Oh, well, I mean, I have so many things to say, and at the risk of sounding, you know, pandering, you know, it is such a privilege to make music and have it received by you and your listeners and by anybody, really. I mean, we are those of us who are crazy enough to devote our lives to making music. We are compelled to do it for reasons that defy logic. But I really believe that those who devote their lives to supporting the music are maybe even a little crazier, you know, than the music makers. I think there's nothing really less reliable as a career than you know, being a venue owner or a radio person who's, you know, playing the music. I mean, you have to do it because you love it. And so I feel so really so close to you and to people who spend their lives immersed in the music.
For more information on Leo Sedrin, leosedrin.com.
Georgette, long before we met, your song was in my head. Georgette, Georgette, how could I forget?
Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.